The Reconstructionist Radio Podcast Network presents Reconcast, a podcast where two homeschool dads share the applications of faith in everyday family life.
How are you doing? Welcome back to Reconcast. Glad that you got a chance to tune in with us today. I got a special show for everyone today. First of all, I'm going solo, so I don't have Dan here with me today, but that's okay. I have a wonderful, amazing interview that I got to do with a special guest, Chaplain E. Ray Moore from Exodus Mandate, which was great. And so we got an opportunity to discuss talking about homeschooling and his ministry, which is Exodus Mandate, and the principles involved in trying to help get Christian parents to really think strongly to get their children out of the public school system. So Mr. Moore, he's been pioneering this. He's a homeschool pioneer, which we love in interviewing those people who've been involved in the homeschooling movement for quite some time, and they understand some of the various vicissitudes and difficulties associated with this task. So Chaplain Moore, he's been involved in Christian education, and he's involved in helping people think through the thoughts about getting their children out of public education. And when we say, I mean, I'm really saying public schools, but what I really mean is government schools. So it's an amazingly huge topic, and I think it's something that still we have to continue talking about, because so many parents are continuing to send their children to these public institutions, these godless institutions. So there's just a couple things that we need to think about, we need to talk about. So really quick before we get started with the whole rest of the show, thanks for joining us today here at Reconcast. I have a lot of stuff that's been going on. We had our Pacific Northwest Reconstruction meeting not too long ago, working hard to prep all that material to get that available, out, and ready for you. If you haven't already, sign up for our newsletter at ReconstructionLife.com. You'll get our free ebook, Building Family Bonds, 5 Ways You Can Bring Your Family Closer Together. And soon, very soon, I'm going to be releasing all the information and all the files, the video files, the audio files from the Pacific Northwest Reconstruction Meeting, and I'm going to be offering a discount to everyone that's already signed up for our newsletter. So incentive there, get signed up on our newsletter, start getting that information, and so you can start getting some encouragement that we're offering here at Reconstruction Life, and you can get a discount available to you when that information comes out. Other things that we've been working on here, we're working on the rest of our catechism books. We've got some other projects that we're working on in the background. There's a lot of stuff going on around here. And, oh, by the way, still a homeschool dad, still trying to raise the family and take care of everybody. So we're busy. We got a lot of stuff going on. So I'm hoping that you're still encouraged. You get to see what we're putting out for our videos and what's happening on the website, and that's still blessing you. But there is so much that's out there for us to do, right? Don't we all kind of feel a little bit busy? Sometimes the path of reconstruction never stops. So for the homeschoolers, I think most of us, we're already on board. We already understand what's happening with Christian education. We understand how important it is. You know, we may have come to a homeschooling conviction via pragmatic reasons, which I know that happens for a lot of families. You know, much like my own family, we kind of just started homeschooling because it was something that mom wanted to do, and I really didn't have too many qualms about it, so I thought that was all right, as long as she was taking care of it, right? I didn't want to get too involved with it. But over time, as things are working out, and the children are being raised and they're being taught, and mom is assuming this responsibility in the home, more and more I see and I begin to understand how important education really is. And now, you know, now, and I've grown a lot, and I'm thankful for my wife's patience with me, but I've grown, I've matured, and I've understood more deeply that education is so fundamental to our understanding. It's really about formulating a worldview. And that's what we're doing in our home. That's what we're doing every day, is we're formulating worldview, our own worldviews, and especially the worldview of our children, the future, right? The future of the faith and who's going to be carrying on the torch. So we need to be extra diligent, thinking about how we can help and how can we bless our children. How can we put them on a right platform from which they can discern what's happening in the world? What sort of choices do they need to make in their life? And we want them to come and embody these principles that we're talking about related to Christian education. So some reasons maybe why some people, and I've been thinking about this because I know it's kind of hard. Sometimes I do have friends that I know that are still struggling through this. And, you know, just some things that maybe can help us think about this, about government-based education. So the first thing is that biblical education is mandatory for Christian parents. It's really not an option. We are commanded by God to instill in our children a biblical view of life and of reality. So what are some things that we can be encouraged by to think about why we don't have to send our kids to government schools? Okay, and I know that it's coming into the season right now. People probably may, some of them have already started school, but what are the some things that we need to think about? Well, first thing is, hey, guess what? You don't have to. It's not a requirement for you to send your children to public school. You know, we are thankfully blessed in this country that we have the rights, the liberty given to us that we don't have to send our children to these godless government institutions. So if you just even wanted to, you can. You have that opportunity. So that's good. That's a real big blessing. And there's some countries out there where they are forced compulsory public education, which is not good. The second thing is that, you know, when you think about what's the state of government schools, they really are among some of the worst schools in the industrialized world. American students, they are continuously ranking at the bottom in math, science, and reading compared to other industrialized nations. So I know everyone tries to say, oh, our schools are different. Hey, newsflash, no, they're not. Okay, they are still part of the same system in the American school system that we are not putting out a high quality product for education in general. So the next thing that you can think about is that thirdly, American schools, they really are morally depraved, just absolutely morally depraved. Every time the news is, these things are flashing across the news, and just the kinds of things that I'm reading about that's happening in schools, you know, the kind of student-teacher sex scandals, the student-to-student sexual acts, immodesty, the language, the drugs, alcohol, the radical homosexual agenda. There's just so much that's happening on a daily basis in these schools that there is just absolutely no reason for Christian children to have to be subject to that sort of moral depravity. So, I mean, we have got to realize that, you know, that non-Christian education puts a child in a vacuum. And the result is that he's going to end up dying. Okay, Christian education alone can nurture the personality because it alone gives the child air and food. The modern philosophy out there on education and in the public system insults God and Christ. And so how in the world can we expect to have anything positively Christian or theistic upon the foundation which the negation of Christianity and theism? How is this possible? You know, there's no teaching of any sort that's possible except from a Christian foundation. So you have to realize this, that the schools are just terrible. They're really, really bad. Fourthly, government education, it's really just completely anti-Christian. It's not founded upon a Christian worldview. It's not founded upon the Bible as the foundation for wisdom and knowledge. I mean, if the child is going to a school that does not rely upon the Bible as the foundation for all their thinking, then it's bereft of that principled stand by which we're supposed to be building all of our understanding as Christians. And I know it seems kind of basic and fundamental, but this is really, really true. The dichotomy that exists in the world, that there's an antithesis between the city of God and the city of man, you know, that whoever is not with Christ is against him. It's just amazing that we continue to believe that it's acceptable for us to take our family into these systems, that there's no real standard for truth. So we really have to understand we're only going to be on one side of this or another. And so the government schools, they are completely anti-Christian. And the number of hours that we're going to put our children subject to that instruction is going to be very, very damaging. So the fifth thing, and then we kind of led with this anyway, is that the Bible commands a Christ-centered education. All right? The whole process of education is religious. And it shouldn't just be religious, but it should be Christian, right? Because Christianity is true, all right? There's one God in Christ, and the only true God. The only possible means of profitable education is the nurture and admonition of the Lord. This is the only thing that we have available to us. So we really have to be fighting back. You know, there's a lot of, I guess you could say, just educational antinomianism in the American church. There's a lot of lawlessness that exists. Nobody really cares about the standards that the Bible puts forth. It's more about convenience or difficulty or challenges. And we see the choices that we make. And I understand that this is difficult, because this happens in other areas as well, even for myself, is that we end up making compromised positions, even though we have a principled stand upon which we're supposed to be founding all of our thinking. So we need to think, is there a pragmatic reason why we're doing this? And I understand there's going to be sacrifices related to living with principles, but that's what the Bible calls us to do. So we have to think about this clearly. So I want everybody here, we'll take a short break, and then when we come back from our break, we'll go ahead and get started here with our interview with Chaplain E. Ray Moore. Thanks so much, you guys, for sticking with us. We got more episodes of ReconCast coming up, interviews that we're going to share with you coming down the pipe. Don't go away. We will be right back.
My name is Andrea Schwartz, and I have been active in Christian education for over 35 years, having homeschooled my three children all the way through high school. Now that they are all graduated and grown, I spend my time mentoring women, helping them become the best teachers for their children. I hold online office hour meetings every Tuesday at 6 p.m. Pacific Time using the Zoom platform. These get-togethers provide homeschooling moms the opportunity to ask questions and get advice in areas they may struggle with as they educate their children. And for those contemplating homeschooling, they can discover how to get started and stay the course. Each week, I will cover a specific area, but the bulk of the time will be spent addressing issues most pressing to you. These meetings are free, but you must register to participate. Search on Facebook for the event entitled Weekly Office Hours with Andrea Schwartz, and then click on Get Tickets.
Are you interested in Christian education? Would you like to learn how to be a Christian teacher or how to run your very own Christian school with success? The GCS Apprenticeship Program can help. Learn more on our website at gcsapprenticeship.com.
Right back out of the break here, ReconCast. Joe Graham coming to you from Reconstruction Life. We're going to play the interview that I had with Chaplain E. Ray Moore right now. It's coming right up. I hope you guys enjoy it. I will see you guys on the backside. Stay tuned, and I will also tell you how you can get in touch with Mr. Moore right on the other side. All right, here it comes. All right, everybody. Really excited to get to this interview that we have. A very special guest on the phone with me today. This is Chaplain E. Ray Moore, a retired lieutenant colonel who has served currently for over 40 years now in the pastoral ministry. He's worked as an army chaplain. He's been engaged in numerous major political campaigns and is a staunch advocate for homeschooling. Now, this is something that's near and dear, obviously, to our heart. So for homeschool dads, this is a guy who is what we would call a homeschool pioneer. And so very, very important, because I want us to all understand how important our heritage is and the torch that is being passed to the men of the current generation. And we are very, very grateful for men like Chaplain Moore, who is joining us today. So Chaplain Moore, welcome to the podcast.
Hey, Joseph, it's glad to meet you by telephone. And I know you're out there in Washington and Whidbey Island. And frankly, we've got some really good supporters that live near you. So thank you for having me. And I'm glad to hear you're homeschooling your children. And trust me, when you get my age, you won't regret it.
Well, that's good. That's good. I'm hoping that other families out there and other dads especially also feel the same way. I know it can be difficult getting through the grind sometimes, you know, but it's really, really important. And I want to talk about the first thing that I'd like to ask you is, since you've been engaged in this pastoral ministry, and we'll talk about some of the other endeavors you're engaged in, you know, there's a totally different time that existed 40 years ago in America with regard to education and the climate that was surrounding the culture. And so I just want to kind of know, can you let us know what was it like? What were the things that were happening in America, in education, around the church at that time that you were thinking about that kind of got the wheels turning in your mind?
Well, I think we need to probably realize that state-sponsored public education has not been God's perfect will for his people, but the system was not so egregious when we started homeschooling, and the crisis that we're into today was not clear in a lot of people's minds, including my own. My wife and I started homeschooling our oldest child, he's now 46, when he was 6 years old in 1977, and I was finishing up my theological seminary, Grace Seminary, in Winona Lake, Indiana, and had a thesis to do. And so we started, we were actually working on campus ministry at Purdue University, and we started homeschooling in 77. And I just think in the wonderful providence of God, he led us into it. It was like we sort of stumbled into it. We weren't looking for it. Yeah. We had moved to Purdue to start our new ministry, and we looked at Christian schools, and we were priced out. We had a small ministry and a small income, and so it was prohibitive financially. But we actually looked at some of them, and we didn't know that they were academically as rigorous as we wanted them to be. And you know, my wife had always planned to be a teacher, and we read a book, Sketches of Jewish Social Life, which was written by the great Hebrew scholar, Christian scholar Edersheim, and in it was a chapter in it on the education model in the time of Jesus. And apparently he was homeschooled himself by Mary and Joseph until he was about 12 years old. So we thought, well, if Jesus could do it, and his mom and dad would do it, we could do it too. So that was only outside of Scripture book or anything that we had that we even knew about. And so we just moved forward and started homeschooling. And really within a few months, we knew we had stumbled into something really unique. Didn't take long, and it sort of surprised us. Our son was 6 at the time. He doesn't remember this, but he's 46 now and got 4 kids. But he knew something was weird about it, and he very upset with it. He said, "Mommy and Daddy, don't do this to me." You know, he was looking to go to school with all of his friends, and we said, "We're just going to pray about it and take it one year at a time. If it doesn't work out, we'll put you in the local public school." Mm-hmm. I'm kind of shocked at that statement now. But that was 1977. So we've kind of grown in our understanding of the problem, the crisis, since then.
Yeah. Was it back then in the 70s? I mean, homeschooling wasn't really very big, right? Most people were doing it under the radar.
Right. I'm guessing there were several hundreds of families in the United States at that time homeschooling. But we didn't know another family in Indiana until 1980 or 81. I can't quite remember. We found another family about 3 or 4 years later. Just sort of stumbled and bumped into them. And so it didn't really exist. And we were concerned about legal harassment. And I had contacted David Gibbs, who's a prominent lawyer who's defended the religious rights of believers for years, and he agreed to defend us if we got in any legal trouble. We were contacted by the State Department of Education in Indiana, wanting to know why we were homeschooling, and they said that we were the only family in Indiana they knew about.
Wow.
Doesn't mean that we were, but that was the only one they knew about. And so I answered them by saying, if you can't show and demonstrate that we are harming our children, our only child was in home school, you cannot interfere with what we were doing. And it sort of shocked him, I think. So a week or so later, they called back and wanted us to help them develop a home school permission form. Now, this is all happening in, I think, around 1980. We had started in 1977, so it was 3 years before they discovered us, caught us. And they wanted us to help them develop a homeschool permission form. And my answer was, permission is not yours to give, but we would consider helping you develop a homeschool notification form, not permission. And they never called us again. That was the end of it. So we just sat by the phone waiting, and they never bothered us again. That was the end of the discussion.
And so, I mean, for the majority of Americans, you know, my parents, they were public school. Like, that was just what it was. And it's called, and it's still called, largely public school to this day. But that's not really what it is.
No, we actually don't use, if you use the word public school, you're implying that the schools are run by the public and they're for the public.
Right.
And neither is true. So we use the term government school.
Right, right.
Which is what they really are.
Right, and it's a totally different idea.
Yeah, yeah. And so, I'd rather have the government give me health care and give me food rather than educate my children. Can you think of anything more dangerous than having the government work on your child's mind and soul? And that's what most Christians have surrendered their children to. It's outrageous.
Yeah.
So we're trying to challenge that and have been doing it really for 20 years. If you had told me in 1977 you're going to start homeschooling your children and then 20 years later you're going to launch a ministry called the Exodus Mandate Project, which is what our ministry is called, to try to get everybody else to either homeschool or put your kids in a private Christian school, I said, you're crazy, man. Mm-hmm. This is just about me and my kids. But it wasn't about me and my kids. It was about other kids as well.
So there was definitely like some, maybe they were small battles at the time, but there was a cultural pushback against this homeschooling idea. And were you and your wife a part of that? At all, fighting against that?
Well, we were, I told you, we had two situations with the State Department of Public Instruction in Indiana, and it never came to any kind of litigation, but we were concerned about it, and it never did get to litigation, and I don't know if the answers I gave or why they didn't pursue us anymore, but they didn't do that after about 1981. I'm a little shaky on the years now, and I didn't keep a good log, when everything happened. But they never did pursue us. But then, of course, in the 80s and 90s, there was a lot of litigation and suits against homeschool families trying to stop them. And the Christian attorneys, some of them with the Homeschool Legal Defense Association and other groups like that, ended up winning about 96% of the cases. So it's relatively free and unregulated. It just depends on what state you're in. Right. And it is you know, and I don't know the laws in every state, but they vary from state to state. Some are freer and have more liberty and lack of restrictions than others.
Right. So in the 80s and 90s, lots of the families are defending homeschooling, and homeschool has to be defended. Why is it that the government, you think, was so interested in defending government education over private homeschool education?
Well, you know, they had in the right after the First World War, a lot of the compulsory attendance laws passed, and you know, we didn't have those kind of laws. You know, people were free. You know, prior to, you know, World War One, I'm not quite sure when all of them passed. I think that one of the last states was in maybe the state of Mississippi right after World War One. I'm a little shaky on that detail. Might want to research it, but we didn't have compulsory attendance, and school was, you know, state education was not considered, you know, mandatory, and so the government has sort of came in and asserted themselves. And I think there, we have a little bit of this information in our movie, Escaping Common Core. Maybe I could put that webpage out,
okay.
EscapeCommonCore.com. And it really goes back to Dewey around the turn of the 20th century. He was a great leader of progressivism and progressive education. And they kind of grew a belief, you know, that the government had a responsibility to educate. And prior to Dewey and really prior to Horace Mann, it was a foreign idea. If you had suggested, Horace Mann came along in the 1840s, and the first state-run, that would be state government-run public schools were in New England and Massachusetts starting around 1840. Prior to that, all education at the K-12 level was provided by family groups, private associations, and churches and denominations. And there was no state, now that's important to say, state-run public schools. Sometimes the community schools in the New England area were referred to as public schools, but they were not state-controlled. They were more like our church schools today.
Mm-hmm.
And that came, for the first 200 years of American history, we had no state-run schools. We had state churches and private schools. And now we have private churches and state schools. And so we've reversed that. So we want to go back to the original model. We don't have state-sponsored religion, and we don't have state-sponsored education. And really, state-sponsored education is state-sponsored religion. We have to realize it is a secular humanist religion, and it's anti-Christian in design and precept and practice.
Right. So a lot of, not a lot, but some Christians have, you know, kind of woke up to this, and this was happening, like you said, around that time in the 70s and 80s. They're kind of, you know, bucking that trend. Of being a part of the government education system, and I don't know if maybe they knew quite what they were doing at that time. You maybe could provide some insight to that, but you know, I picked up this statistic that says the Department of Education reported that between 2003 and 2013, the percentage of children homeschooled has risen from 2.2% to 3.4%, which to them is a 250% increase.
Right, and it might be higher. We a lot of people don't report,
right.
But it's at least 4%.
Right,
and some say it could be, you know, higher than that. So it's a really exciting development.
Right,
one of the most exciting and wonderful things that's going on in our country, if not the world today.
Yeah, so as far as evangelicals are concerned and other Christians, you know, what's the primary motivation here that they should be thinking about with regard to homeschooling, and specifically what we're talking about is education, right? What should they be thinking about with regard to education of their children?
Well, I think we have to realize in some ways homeschooling is sort of a misnomer. Early movement got tagged with that term, but I'd like to say it's also just biblical parenting. And education is certainly a part of it, but it's the way God has ordained us to disciple our children in the family. We also support private Christian schools, even though we prefer homeschooling, particularly in the early years, because my ministry is trying to get evangelicals in particular, but you know, all people to get out of that system, because it's harming children. And if it harms our children, then it ends up harming our culture and our churches and families as well. But one of the best and the greatest things is this discipling children in the family, and the bonding between parent and child goes on longer. There's an effort to try to get children away from their parents earlier. You know, some of the left, hard left, even advocate, you know, grabbing them as soon as they leave the womb. I'm being facetious when I say that. Yeah. But they want us from cradle to grave. And so we think the family should have, you know, primarily discipling. And in most cases, just average people can teach their children. You'd just be amazed. You don't have to be a college graduate, a highly educated person. Let me tell you a little story to kind of illustrate this. Years ago, I came across a young man when I was in Georgia, and he was just recently out of his homeschool experience. And this was a sharp young man, 18 years old, but he was a little bit not cool, because I guess he hadn't been in the the culture where kids 18 really know how to dress sharp, and he was just a little bit not cool. But I was just so impressed with his intellect and everything, and his depth of his spiritual life. So I didn't keep up with him, but I remembered him well. It would have been 6 or 8 years later. I'm up at Liberty University Law School in Lynchburg, and I'm pretty good friends with the academic dean of the law school, and we were talking about homeschooling. He said to me, he said, "Ray, you just wouldn't believe how some of these homeschool kids do at Liberty Law School." He said, "We've got graduates of military academies in our student body and Ivy League schools, and some of these kids from homeschooling come in here, and they are extraordinarily talented and do well." He said the kid that's the number one in the class in the second year class never went to school. He was homeschooled through the 12th grade, and then he kind of patched together a college degree by doing online and other things, but he got a degree and he had one, so we let him in because his LSAT was so high, he just knocked the socks out of the law school entrance exam. And he's number one in the class. And he's competing against all these West Pointers and Harvard. You know, they had some of those in the class. And I said, "Well, what's the guy's name? Tell me his name." He said, "His name is Jose, and I won't call his last name." I said, "Really? I know that guy." I was shocked. It was the guy that I had met at a homeschool convention about 6 years earlier. And so I said, "Call him up. I want to see him." So the dean called him up. He came over to the office, and we met. I hadn't seen him in 6 years. And I said, "Jose." He looked so sharp. He had on a three-piece suit and nice shine shoes. He looked like a Wall Street lawyer. And he had kind of gotten out of the nerd stage.
Yeah.
And I said to him, I said, "Tell me about your parents. You must have had extraordinary parents. I guess they both had their PhDs, because the dean has been bragging about your performance here." And he said this, and this will encourage any family who thinks they can't do the job. He said, "Ray, I grew up in a lower middle class working family." He said, "My dad was a car mechanic, and my mom never graduated from high school. But they were so convicted before the Lord to give us a Bible-based Christian and home education that both mom and dad went back to school and studied, mm-hmm. and stayed 2 weeks ahead of the kids." Now, I guess they had high, good genes. They weren't dumb parents, but they did not have formal education, either one of them.
Right.
And yet he came out and he graduated high in his class. I think he's clerking for a judge somewhere in the Southeast. So those are not unusual stories.
Yeah.
And my own son, who was one of the early homeschool kids in the modern era, he finished college in 93, and he was only homeschooled through middle school. But he graduated from the Citadel, which is a military college in South Carolina, and he was both the valedictorian and the cadet colonel and regimental commander his senior year. And that's only happened four times in the nearly 200-year history of the school that one student got both of those awards the same year. So we have seen a lot of stories like that, and it's just an incredible thing that God is doing in our day. But it's not big enough and not strong enough, and so my ministry is to go after the 80% of the born-again Christians that are still in the bondage of these government schools.
I recently listened to the interview that you had on Dr. Dobson's program, and there were several things that were mentioned in that program, and one of them was the implication of the map. You talked about the map that was overtaken by blue states based on millennials, essentially on the the voting block, the future voting block.
Yeah, that's pretty shocking, isn't it?
Right.
Yeah.
So what does this mean? Why is this, you know, and I know that we're not, you know, a lot of home educators aren't simply doing this because they want to, you know, make a new America, but because they have this conviction about the necessity of it. But there are certain cultural impacts for this decision. What was that map all about?
Well, first of all, if your audience is interested, and I'd urge you to interview Dan Smithwick with the Nehemiah Institute. He's the one that created that map, and he would be a great interview. And he and I have been closely associated, you know, as separate organizations, but working together really for over 20 years. But it shows the election of, you know, November 8th of 2016. And it's a map of the states that the Republican candidate Trump won as opposed to the Democratic candidate Hillary Clinton. But then he created another map where only the millennials voted. Of course, that's not the case. I'm not a millennial. I'm 73. But it looked only at the 18 to 34-year-olds, and only they had voted, and the rest of us had not voted. Trump would have gotten like 23 votes and carried only five states, and Hillary would have won over 500 votes. And it shows that about, and there are different projections on this, but some are saying 80% of the millennials have voted liberal or Democrat. May not be that high in some of the southern Midwestern states, but on the West Coast, Northeast, it's very, very intense. The indoctrination is very strong. So we're going to lose the culture completely in a generation. And that's why we talk about this election being a reprieve. We had a stay of execution. And I don't know that Donald Trump is going to, you know, make it everything right. But we have sort of a window where we may have liberty and freedom to move forward in a strong way and be able to accomplish some things without being harassed by the government for the next 4 years. Often you see in Scripture a favorable political change can bring about a spiritual change as well. If you look at the book of Haggai, I don't have a Bible in front of me, but Haggai 1:1 talks about Darius the king coming in, and he followed Cyrus, who you may remember had released the children of Israel to go back to their homeland. And they had gone back, but they were very despondent and dispirited and defeated, and they had been stalled from rebuilding the city and rebuilding the temple. And then Darius came along, and he made it possible for them to go forward. So the Haggai the prophet said, look, you can't just sit in your panel houses and do nothing. We've got to rebuild God's place of worship. And we could be in one of those kinds of moments where we've got a favorable political situation for at least the next 4 years, and it gives Christians and churches a chance to really, really go forward in a new and dynamic way and rebuild our families, our churches, and our culture. Now, in my case, my motivation was not political. It was strictly to bring about Christ-centered, Bible-based education for families and churches. But if we do the right thing morally and spiritually, it always has a good political outcome, it can. And so we happen to use a base argument to try to motivate some of these people,
right.
You know, to, I hate to say a base argument, but say, look, you know, look what's going to happen to your country and to your children. They're going to be in desperate straits if we don't grow our movement. We've got to get above 4%,
right.
As happy as that is. So I don't know if that answers the question or not.
Well, I think the important thing that that I noticed when I heard that you say that is that that there's a heck of a lot of discipleship that's happening across this country, a lot of it, and
mm-hmm.
and that refurbished map that was created is evidence that there is a tremendous amount of values being commuted to millennials,
mm-hmm.
and that's happening on multiple levels, and the cultural onslaught is nonstop. It's in
right.
your ears, it's in your eyes, it's in what you read, it's in what you're surrounded with, it's in your social media feeds. It's definitely happening in your schools, in your public schools as well.
Uh-huh.
So how is this? I mean, you kind of mentioned this, and I noticed I kind of got the tone from the Dobson interview that there was kind of maybe some pragmatic reasons why to appeal toward people to leave the public school or government schools, but really the underlying current of what I thought you were getting at, and you mentioned it briefly, was about the paideia, right? Raising your
right.
children in fear and admonition. What is that? What does that mean? What is
that word?
What does that mean?
It's bigger than just the word fear. It really is more like the word culture. It's a Greek word for culture. And so it means that we're raise our children up in the culture of the Lord. And so most evangelicals just think, well, you know, you take them to Sunday school, they maybe memorize a little few verses here or there, and they go to youth group, and you know, and then they can just live any old way the rest of the week. But it talks about, it really looks at an environment, a Christian environment, a Christian culture. And so we just lost that concept. And the left, the globalists and the postmodernists, they know exactly what they're doing. They know what they're doing. They know they're indoctrinating and converting and winning over the culture. Why can't Christians see it? I mean, you look at born-again Christians who have the Holy Spirit and the Bible, and the lack of understanding of so many of our people is just extraordinary. I look at what the enemy and the devil is doing to the culture and to our children, and that amazes me, just the seriousness of the evil they're doing. But I am more amazed at the church and the Christians, people, and the pastors who can't get it. And so I spend a lot of my time, you know, trying to awaken them. So we've got to get them out. And we've got to, those of us that are in churches that don't promote homeschooling, Christian school, and they need to lovingly correct their pastor if they're not doing it. I frankly would not go to a church where the pastor public schooled his kids. That would tell me that he has made a compromise at some major level and lacks understanding of basic things of how God works and how the devil works.
Right.
Now, sometimes you'll be in churches where there's a lot of people who are public schooling, the pastor does, you know, homeschool his own kids or puts them in Christian school, but he's not aggressive about promoting it in the church, and that's a separate problem. And we need to try to lift those people up and get them to be more forthright about rescuing their flocks. But we got a problem with the pastors. I mean, as a 40-year minister, army chaplain, director of a Christian ministry, I hate to tell you that we've got a lot of weak pastors in the evangelical world. It's rather frightening. ACSI, which is the biggest Christian School Association for Evangelicals, just completed a study on how to grow Christian schools and different issues of Christian schooling. They were more looking at Christian schooling rather than homeschooling. But there's a chapter in it on the attitude of pastors. And it's pretty extraordinary that only 9% of evangelical pastors, that's people that believe like you and me, strongly support Christian schools. And about less than 30% of them support it at all, which means that well over 50% don't support it at all, and about 25 to 30% are hostile to Christian schooling and homeschooling. So, and those are the leaders of the flock. So I believe when I looked at that study, for years I've been trying to awaken the pastors. I think I'm going to announce today that I'm going to go out a little bit stronger in the next period. My wife and I are actually writing a little book called Dear Pastor, How to Save the Children in Your Church and Not Lose Your Job. That seems to be what most of them are concerned about. Well, you know, the Bible calls that kind of a pastor a hireling. A hireling is somebody who won't take care of the flock, and when the wolf comes, they run away. I forget that's in John, maybe 12 or 13. But if you're a true called pastor, you're going to put the flock ahead of everything else, and you'll lay your life down for the flock like our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ did for us. And so we have a lot of people in the ministry who may not be called. They may just be have a job. But good news, Joseph, is that we don't need all of them. We need about a third of them, maybe 25% to a third, maybe half, to stand up and be the leaders of their churches and their flocks that God's called them to be. And so we've got to awaken our pastors. And I will say a lot of them don't know what's going on. They're kind of isolated. They don't know what's happening in their communities, in the schools. But a lot of them do. And it's your job and your listeners' jobs to awaken and educate your pastor and make him accountable, mm-hmm. hold him accountable.
Well, I can say for us and our family, you know, we were introduced to Mr. Smithwick's work and other influential men, and maybe they were pastors, maybe they were just regular men. It didn't really make a difference. The difference was that we were inspired. We were inspired that this was important, that this Christian culture that we were surrounding ourselves with, it put legs on our faith, and like you said, moved the essence of our faith beyond Sundays into Monday through Saturday, the whole entire week. And it was a comprehensive view of approaching Christianity and approaching our faith. And we started seeing that it has to do with everything that we do, absolutely everything. Uh-huh. So at least for us here in this podcast, you got a couple homeschool dads that are just talking to other dads, and whether they're pastors or not, I just want to inspire parents that this is important. This is super uh-huh. important. And whether you think it's going to make a difference and change the world is, you know, kind of that's all in God's hands. But I guarantee you, you're going to change your children's lives. You're going to absolutely revolutionize their entire experience. And you're going to raise up children that can look at the world and say, wow, this is something that's important. We are fighting back. There is a lot of struggle that's going on, but my parents are making a sacrifice, because I'm sure that you know as well, getting involved in home-based discipleship home education, it's a sacrifice. It's not easy.
Right.
It's hard. Yeah. It's difficult. But if your goal is submitting to the Lordship of Christ in every area, then you'll leave him to the fruits, and you just keep planting and watering.
We're praying that we're in a breakthrough moment. The Dobson interview was probably one of the biggest moments I've had in 20 years of doing this. And I hope maybe some of your listeners would feel led to go listen to that program if they have it. It's on Family Talk on March 20 and 21. I know you apparently you listened to it, and the title of it was The Current State of Public and Christian Education, Part 1 and 2. But Dr. Dobson deserves kudos for having it because, you know, he took a risk. You know, a lot of people really get angry over this. It's okay, but, you know, it's not pleasant. But the response was pretty overwhelmingly strong and favorable. Mm-hmm. And I've had this unbelievable response for the last 3 weeks. I just can't believe all the people have contacted me, wanting to interview, and there's been a lot of stuff on podcasts and Facebook, and it's really gone out real strong.
So so your work with Exodus Mandate, tell us a little bit about that. Then you've mentioned this DVD. What is
okay.
it about? How do people find it?
Okay. Well, Exodus Mandate Project is a Christian ministry to assist and encourage Christian families and churches to leave behind the government school system for the promised land of Christian schooling or homeschooling. And additionally, it's our prayer and hope that a fresh obedience by Christian families in educating their children according to biblical commands will prove to be a key for revival or renewal of our families, our churches, and our culture. And then the third point would be that we believe that these the scripture assigns the education of children to the family with assistance from the church or to the family and the church and not to government. So we don't believe the state of Washington or the state of California has any right to be educating children at the K-12 level. Now, I'm not dumb. I know they're doing it, and they think they do, but they're usurping the role of the family and the church. And if we believe that, then we won't put our kids there. So we spend a lot of our time trying to persuade Christians to be obedient, to express will of God. The scriptures are unequivocal. They're not ambiguous on this. You can't find any verses that give you permission to put your kids in a pagan school system. And but many Christians buy into this salt and light idea, which is a valid teaching of Scripture, but it's misapplied to children at the K-12 level. Jesus never meant for you to be putting your kids under pagan education because he said people ought to be salt and light. It's the most abused verse in the Bible, in my opinion, Matthew 5:13-14. I believe in it because Jesus said it, but it shouldn't be applied to children at the K-12 level. So we have created movies. I've written a book called Let My Children Go, which is kind of out of print now. We're getting ready to reissue that hopefully in the next 3 to 6 months. We had a movie. The first movie we had was Let My Children Go. Then I helped with the indoctrination movie. I was executive producer of that. Colin Gunn and Joaquin Fernandez were the director producers. That was a highly successful movie, probably reached 2 or 3 million. And it's still going strong, and that if your audience is interested in that, they can order that from indoctrinationmovie.com. And then in the last 2 years, I've helped bring out a separate movie called Escaping Common Core, and that looks at the Common Core issue and the harm that that's doing and using it as a tool or a way to leverage families to leave public education. And that webpage is Escape Common Core, Escape, not escaping, but escapecommoncore.com. And I'd urge your audience to go there and order that. There's a nice trailer, and they'll see me talking about the movie, and they can order copies from going to escapecommoncore.com.
Great.
We've got a number of books. If they want to contact me at exodusmandate.org, go to our webpage. We've got books and DVDs and a lot of material.
Well, Chaplain Moore, I really appreciate your time, and I just want to let you know that your labor is not in vain and that the Lord is continuing to build this house. So you're a tool, and you're a vessel in his hands, and so I'm grateful. You may not get to see all the fruits of your labors, but God be praised. It'll be all for his glory. So
I would like to see a real great breakthrough in the next few years. I'm hoping to continue in the ministry, this ministry, another 5 or 6 years, hope till I'm 80. I did have a theologian tell me recently that his 70s were his most productive years. So I'm in good health, and I'm going to try to keep going as long as I can.
That's great. That's great. Well, sir, really appreciate your time. Thanks so much for contributing here, and we'll try to keep you reserved, and hopefully this message gets out to a lot of people, and we'll put links in the description to what we have, what you talked about today. But thank you again very much.
God bless you. It's great to be with you.
All right, guys, thanks so much again for joining us here on ReconCast. Thanks for listening. Chaplain Moore really appreciated that interview that we had with him. I thought it was great. So just putting again another punctuation point, you can reach his information about Escaping Common Core, the video that recently they released at escapecommoncore.com. That's where you can get that. And then also, if you want to find out more about Exodus Mandate, just go to exodusmandate.org. They're having their 20th anniversary celebration very soon. They're going to be having they're celebrating the 20th anniversary of the Exodus Mandate Project and also the 500th anniversary of the Reformation, which we're also celebrating. We made a couple cool t-shirts and stuff. Been talking about it with my kids in the evenings. We're learning all about the Reformation. It's great. If you wanted to go and try to get a chance, if you're out in the South, Exodus Mandate is having an anniversary banquet featuring Cal Thomas on the 26th of October. Recommend you guys, if you're out near South Carolina, go check that out. Go to Exodus Mandate. You can get the information there. And they've got a bunch of seats for sale, so you can go and join them. If you want to get in touch with Chaplain Moore, you can email him at info@exodusmandate.org. Thanks you guys so much for hanging with us and for still being fans here. We got a lot of stuff that's going on, but I appreciate your time. And I appreciate you sticking with us and hanging out. All right? We'll be back soon, you guys. Take care.
Thank you for listening to this episode of ReconCast. Don't forget to visit ReconstructionLife.com and ReconstructionistRadio.com.